Dr. Robinson is concerned about the world, and he's concerned that scepticism can go too far, that as a result of that we actually may not think about the things that we actually want to think about and that we should think about because you are arguing too much. That would be the thesis of the
argument. It's misdirected scepticism.
It's misdirected, yes. We should not let our scepticism become cynicism or even resignation, should we? Yeah. Enough said. Please welcome Dr. John Robinson.
In 20 years' time, our civilization will probably collapse and billions of people will be dying. Well, that sounds like the end of the world is nigh, and what a nutter I am. I'm going to present very quickly some of the science that suggests that there is some validity to that, and I'm going to suggest that if there's a possibility of it being true, we should be taking it very, very seriously, and Parliament should be considering that rather than considering whether you can hit your kid or whether they put an H in Whanganui or the other trivia which really, as we know, dominate our news. And I'm going to mention the other side of the picture. Some people believe that the world is infinite and we can keep on growing, and even with the evidence that is so clear today of a finite globe with melting ice and goodness knows what else, they're insisting we've got to get back to growth, and the trick then is to call it sustainable growth and everything is okay if it's growth that's called sustainable. And you'll gather that I'm very pleased to be here because really I've been treated as a nutter for the last 25 years, and I'm quite serious about that. I have a career in applied mathematics, moved into futures research, went off to Europe and learnt an enormous amount, in my view, but from 1984 on, not wanted here in New Zealand. So we live with an extraordinary population explosion, and you'll have seen these graphs. They're quite common now, of the way the population has just whipped up in the last 100 years. It's been growing and growing and growing for thousands of years, and it hit about 3,000 in 1964. 40 years later, it had doubled to 6 billion. What a ridiculous thing. And another 40 years, it picks up another 3 billion to 9 billion. So you do have to ask the question, how long can that go on before you hit a crunch? And scientific evidence, I'm going to touch on very little here today, but believe you me, there's an awful lot of work been done in this area, building global models and bringing together teams of experts and scientists and gathering information. It suggests an overpopulated world threatened by food and water shortages. Could I emphasise that? Because that's going to hit us long before climate change, long before some of the other problems that are popular at the moment. But the shortage of oil supplies, huge changes due to global warming, social breakdown, because that will follow. If you want to understand what you can expect when there are food shortages, you just read history. Read about the terrible 14th century and the 15th century. This has happened before. Population collapse and war, people will be fighting over resources. It's pretty easy to make some of these forecasts if the arithmetic holds up. So I forecast global catastrophe and death of billions in 20 years. I say you should be sceptical of this, but the possibility is enormous, very important. So we should consider both some of the evidence and the opposing evidence. And I put up here a quote I just found last week because I was reading a book by Priestley, and no doubt those who believe that the society we've created during the last 150 years is essentially sound and healthy will continue to believe, if they ever think about him, that Blake is insane. And you can might as well put my name in there, because if our society is sane, I'm a lunatic up here in front of you. Some of us are starting to get a bit angry because the time goes on and nothing changes, and it's time to get pretty angry. We're not talking about, like in 1972, we're not saying, oh, in 70 or 80 years there might be a crunch. We're now at the point of saying in 20 years there might be a crunch. It's getting a bit more serious. But there's more profit for mind and soul in believing our society to be increasingly insane and Blake to be sound and healthy. So it's quite a, quite a choice. I don't suppose you'll make a decision right here, but you go away and think about it. Either I'm a bit of a lunatic, or there's something desperately wrong with our society. Now, the forecast that I'm talking about started off in the 1960s. By 1968, the Club of Rome was formed, a group of people who could see problems all around the world and wanted to do something about it. 1972, The Limits to Growth was published in a very simple model. I'm referring to it here because it's convenient rather than it's the only bit of research that I would rely on for coming to any conclusion. But if the forecasts were made in 1972, it's quite a few years later now, we can look at how they're going. In science, that's what you do. You make a forecast, you wait and see how it goes. I can remember back then people said futures research was a load of rubbish because you can never test it. Of course you can, you just got to wait. Well, the time has passed and we now can have a look at some of these forecasts. We can say, okay, are they proving nonsense or are they proving to look fairly valid? First I want to mention, before I go to the limits to growth, an analysis I did in 2000, and I was looking at all the various forecasts, so not just my own, not the ones I believe in, but the ones that other people were writing in all the literature, because there's quite a hairy literature of futures research. There's some real rubbish in it, there's some worthwhile things, but I found that there's a possibility of the coexistence of two very different pictures of the future world. I was finding two pictures. One was the one that I believe is valid. Some of the models suggest the possibility of the food shortages, which would exacerbate the considerable inequalities observed today, and that negative scenario may be exacerbated by water shortages and climate change. Water is going to be the big one. There's just no doubt of that. But a much more prevalent picture in futures research is of increasing human capacities, new technologies and wealth. You know, the pictures of all these flash cars hovering above the ground, and we'll all have our little things on our back. But it's one of considerable wealth, considerable capability. We've got them here. Look at these little stick which carries all these slides and this funny little thing. So we're well along that way, and you can't doubt that there's something happening there. So what conclusion did I reach then? Both sets of forecasts can prove viable. So the different trends will be more important in different regions or to different classes in our society. We have a very class-ridden society. We have an underclass in New Zealand, so let's talk about class, and different groups of people will have different experiences. And I've said nothing. The difference is just like medieval Europe or the London of Dickens. So both sets of forecasts could be robust. So I'm not denying that all sorts of technological optimism forecasts can come true, but they'll be happening at the same time as billions of other people will be starving. I believe that the comment has been made, if you look at one of these beautiful paintings of medieval Middle Ages Europe, and there's a castle and it's all pretty, and over in the background this poor peasant living his horrible little short life. I think that's the future we'll have. Now let's have a look at the limits to growth, published in 1972. Have a look at the forecasts and compare them with observed data to 2000. Now, this is a very aggregated model. It's not broken up into regions. It's the whole world in one picture. And there are many other models we can go to for far more information, but you would discuss those in detail over a lot more time than we have here. And this work comes from the CSIRO, which is in Australia, and I'll make the point now, I'll make the point again later. It could not be done in New Zealand because we don't have a DSIR anymore. New Zealand science is completely hamstrung by the funding system that is set up. If you want to do research in New Zealand, you fill in a form and you convince Forst or Morst or whoever they are that you're going to come up with the results. That's not science. Science is not knowing what you're going to come up with. A lot of science is just giving it a go. I think this, that science is dead in New Zealand, so is this sort of science is tremendously unpopular. Now, so here we've got a good test of some forecasts. Back in 1972, echoing the concerns of many, many people around the world, including us here in New Zealand, and remember the National Party set up the Commission for the Future. Not the way out Labor or values or whatever. So there's a lot of concern back then. If we go quickly through the forecast, we'll find that the observed data, these little blue dots, run pretty closely along their standard run. Because they did, first of all, a standard run. This is the world as they expected it, as the data told them. They then did another run, assuming all sorts of technological breakthroughs, and mixed that in for a much more optimistic future and a stabilised world. They said what would happen if we all woke up to the problem, which we didn't, and we stabilised the population, stabilised resource use, stopped wasting oil, all those things. So you've got the alternatives, and it's running along pretty close to the standard run. That's population. Next one is food per capita. And you can see the different runs start to diverge quite a bit here, and the observed data is running closer to their standard run. And remember, if you look here, you'll see the standard run a collapse in food per capita in the next 10 or 20 years. Now remember that these are fairly broad brush, these are models. They're not predicting anything. They're not saying in the year 2019 such and such will happen. They're saying around about 2020 we'll have this. But if it were to continue, boom, that's what we're facing if the model has any validity. And here we're testing the model. We're looking here at non-renewable resources. And you can see here that the CSIRO scientists had a bit of trouble working out just what they would measure, what measures they would use for non-renewable resources. So they have two sets of observed data. There's a fair bit of uncertainty in that, but one set is certainly running along the standard run, and I think a lot of us will know that the end of the oil age is going to bring a huge change, much bigger than you could feed into this model. The oil peak happened last year. We live in New Zealand, which is a very ignorant, strange country. Just a few years ago, the officials in our government were telling our government that the oil peak might happen in 2035. Whereas every other expert that I know of in the world was saying around about 2008, give or take a few years, and it surely will happen. Another one of their forecasts about oil was that the oil price would stay at most $35 a gallon, and a barrel, $35 a barrel, and that was based on the futures market. We have a level of information and science and expertise in New Zealand that is appallingly bad. I think the politicians want to be told rubbish, and they get it. Now, global pollution, here they have taken into consideration the climate change and the global warming and so on, and they find it moving up pretty much along the limits to growth standard run. So all of these different measures are following the trend that was forecast, and I think as far as you can test the model, it's turning up trumps. So you can't dismiss it. Of course, it doesn't prove it completely, but you can't dismiss it at the moment. If it was a really wacky model, I think it would have been disproved by now. Now, the reaction to that model was denial. And I'm going to just present a couple of bits of the counterproof that were presented when the limits to growth came up, because many people, many great organisations in the world, big businesses and so on, want growth. They want us to keep on building more and more. They don't want us to stop. So the very suggestion is worrying to them. A major report was in 1977, a report to the United Nations, the future of the world economy. I've got it at home, it's about that thick, by a team headed by a Nobel Prize winning economist, Leontief. Well, it must be good, mustn't it, if it's headed by an economist. I can tell you, when it was reported, I didn't believe in the report, but I couldn't say anything about it because I was a scientist. And a scientist has to read the document before you criticise it. And you know, they hadn't prepared their report when they made their public statements. It was 6 months before we got their report. Because it was widely reported. This is reported in the Dominion and in the National Business Review. I think a lot of people listened to it and believed it. Among the most significant aspects of the study are its rejection of predictions by the Club of Rome, that's the limit to growth I'm talking about, that the world will run out of resources and choke on its pollution if it continues to expand its economy. And in the summary, and this is where you have to stop and read things rather carefully, and you have to see the report before you know what to think of it. No insurmountable physical barriers exist within the 20th century to the accelerated development of the developing regions. That's what it said. And I've highlighted here the key words, within the 20th century. That's what they said. Now, had that disproved the limits of growth, let's have a look at the graph of population, for example. They had run their model up to the year 2000. They had found no problem within the 20th century. Believe it or not, the limits to growth found no problem in the 20th century. It's a complete con, and it went round the world. It was widely reported, widely believed. So there's their data, and many people who work in this area have made the same comment. They repeated the limits to growth exactly. Their forecast was exactly the same as the limits to growth, but they just stopped it in time. And there's the full curve. It's when you continue well out. I think I should allow myself to get a bit angry here, because they knew jolly well that the collapse would happen around 2020, 2030, whatever. So they simply stopped short of it and said, look, no problem. This is not the only place where you find this sort of chicanery. I worked for 6 months on OECD Interfutures in Paris. It was a big international study of the future, and they had lots of global models, and they churned away. And they came out in their report with comments which were totally divorced from all the work that had gone into it. They were just made up. A world population of 12 billion will be very much below the Earth's absolute capacity. So why on earth we want to go to the Earth's absolute capacity is beyond me. We're quite sure now that if we want to live a good life, there could be 1 or 2 billion. But you could pack in lots more. Why you want to, I don't know. But I am telling you that that is not based on the work that went on within that project. It was just written into the report. Economic growth may continue during the next half century in all the countries of the world without encountering insurmountable long-term physical limits at the global level. And all their many computer model calculations stopped in 2000. I worked there, I know that. They did all these calculations. Report came out in 79, they were forecasting 20 years ahead. But they made sure they didn't go into the problem zone. So, we do have the position that a lot of you will have heard and read and believed that all these forecasts, which are called doomsday, gloomy, pessimistic, have been disproved and we can forget them. And I can just give you an idea of some of the disproof. Now, thinking ahead was gone by 1984. The National Party set up the Commission for the Future in order to think about the future, but what they did was think about the future, criticise some National Party policy, and bang, they were gone. And after 1984, such thinking was just not allowed. We were going to float along on the market. But how about official New Zealand forecasts? Because forecasts continue to be made. And in 1990, we have the Planning Council, which was not killed off as quickly as the Commission for the Future, came up with a report. The fully employed high-income society in 1990, the title says it all. It received nationwide publicity. It really did. It was in all the papers, highly touted. It suggested that sustainable full employment with full incomes was possible by 1995 due to high rates of productivity increase, but pretty much the same policies as usual. You find buzzwords appearing in a lot of this work. Productivity increase, ask yourself what it means. It's like you've had a circular statement. We'll get a great economy if we have a great economy, and then you measure it and you call it productivity increase, so you want more productivity increase. There's no policy in it. But they had a model which suggested that all was well. But what did the model really say? Now, what I did was just read the report several times, and what you often find is a report like this is well written and complete. And if you read it, you can find out what the person actually did. Now, one of the points that come from the reading of the model is estimates of employment requirements commenced in 1988 and ignored the significant loss of jobs between... There's a mistake in there. That should be 1986. Because in the 4 years from 1986... which is the date one model run commenced, to 1990, which is when the report came out. So you're always dealing with past data when you're running your model. And as you're doing your work, the world goes on and things happen. But the model suggested an increase in employment of 38,000. But by the time the model came out, employment had dropped by 90,000. That's exactly the opposite. I would think if you're a good scientist, you'd start junking your model at that stage. It just isn't valid. It isn't working. It isn't fitting. It's too hopeful.